The election is over. It's time to move Wisconsin forward.
It is my sincere hope that the Diamond Jubilee will be an opportunity for people to come together in a spirit of neighborliness.
U.S. banks have greatly improved their financial strength in recent years. Nevertheless, the situation in Europe poses significant risks to the U.S. financial system.
Only foods that meet Disney's fairly strict guidelines are going to be allowed to be licensed and advertised.
Well, you just heard some of the sounds of the top stories of the past 7 days, all packaged into one little neat montage by our guys in the control room. But that wasn't all that happened this week. There's a whole lot more. Joining us now is our panel of social, political, and pop cultural experts to tell us about the stories you may have missed. This week, we call it Follow Friday, and joining me across the table, Farai Chidea, journalist and fellow at Harvard University's Institute for Politics. Hi, Farai.
How's it going?
Wonderful to have you here. Dan Damon is host of BBC's World Update and is on the line from the UK, I assume. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, hi, Todd. Good to talk to you.
There he is. Dan, let me start with you, and let's get Syria at the top, because it's really the most important story of the week. Another massacre reported just yesterday. We've been talking about UN envoy Kofi Annan shuttling, trying to unify international action on Bashar al-Assad. How does this look from your side of the Atlantic there? Does it look like so much dithering, or does it look like Cameron and Obama and Annan and the international community are going to be able to unify and try to get China and Russia to come on board in Syria?
Well, they're certainly going to try. Of course, there is this instinct, isn't there, to do something. You know, we just see these horrible videos, children killed in cold blood. Just the intense sense of failure, of frustration by the international community. But on the other hand, you do have to have some kind of diplomatic solution. You know, the one thing is clear is they're not going to do what they did in Kosovo. They're not going to do even what they did in Libya. They're going to avoid any direct military action, and therefore that means you have to try and get the Russians and the Chinese on board. What we're hearing, Todd, the latest is that there will be some kind of attempt by Kofi Annan to revive his peace plan, to create a kind of grand committee, really, involving Russia and China, as well as those who are already involved, Turkey, but also to bring Iran on board. Now, all of this will take time. It's space for more murder. But, you know, what's the alternative?
Yeah, it seems like there's very little alternative. For I've been struck, I suppose not surprised, I'd like to be surprised by the relative lack of attention to this story in the United States. We have been paying attention to domestic affairs, of course. The Scott Walker story of the failed recall in Wisconsin was a huge story, pitting all of our favorite political sort of checker pieces, Tea Party versus unions, Obama and Scott Walker, all against one another. That's been far more attention-grabbing home here.
Well, I think with Syria, we have seen certain spot coverage that's really good. You know, at certain points, CNN on Anderson Cooper's show, AC360, had some they at one point showed the death of a child, you know, basically bleeding to death and a toddler. And it was so there have been moments like that. But, you know, in the United States, I think we also have been more obsessed with if you're going to talk internationally, issues like the drone strikes that really get more to U.S. foreign policy. You know, if you want to talk about something like the Scott Walker recall, the number one obsession here in the United States is money. You know, I mean, people feel very panicky about what government is doing with money, how much money we have, should we be spending money on public employees. And so in Wisconsin, you have this, you know, the first ever failed recall of a governor, Scott Walker, who, yes, who basically went head to head with the unions. And there were protests and there was sort of an Occupy Wisconsin moment. But in the end,
do you think that's primarily a story about money? Campaign fundraising, really, for whatever other dynamics there were, public sector unions versus Tea Party versus Scott Walker, he outraised his opponent 7-1. I mean, isn't that the bottom line?
I think that's there's so many different facets. I think there's the question of how much public employment does America want? Because when you look at the job trends numbers, the private employment has actually been going up, but public employment continues to plunge. One way to lift the jobs numbers would be to reinvigorate public employment, but there's not really an appetite to do that. There's the campaign fundraising, as you mentioned. Then there's also the fact that Americans don't like recalls. I mean, up until the end, there was a real kind of neck and neck polling about whether or not the recall would succeed. But in the end, the majority of voters don't just fundamentally don't like recalls as a form of governance or as a tool of governance.
Yeah. And we certainly paid attention to that side of the story, the money raised, Todd, here on this side of the Atlantic. And also, of course, we saw this as in some ways an issue that's going to come up in November for us. There was quite a lot of attention paid to the Scott Walker recall.
I'm surprised to hear that in the UK, although the money issue, Dan Damon, in our elections, I know has been making news in the UK and in Europe because of the astronomical amount of money expected to be raised, you know, for November and our super PACs and all the rest of it, which is still foreign to your system.
Well, it is. It feels, can I use the word obscene? You know, you raised this much. $63 million, was it, for the Scott Walker side of the campaign?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we just don't think, we're wrong, of course, but we just don't think money should have anything to do with politics.
It pales in comparison, however, Dan Damon, to what I'm pretty sure Brits spend at Disney World every single year when they fly over to Orlando. And we're hearing this week that that food that's marketed by Disney and cross-marketing promotions is going to get a whole lot healthier. I wonder if that news has reached the UK, Orlando vacations might get a little healthier.
Yeah, exactly, and I remember that very fondly, but still got my Mickey Mouse ears somewhere. I actually think that we are certainly talking about food and its health and the way that obesity is a problem on this side of the Atlantic. We've had some stories in the past week about the changes to diet, and also a story that exercise actually doesn't make you feel all that much better. We covered some research which shows that if you're depressed, getting out and doing exercise, which I would think would be very good for you, that actually doesn't make much difference. Medication is more likely to help you than going out for a run.
I'm sorry, to make you feel better? That
yeah.
can't be. It makes me feel a whole lot better.
Me too. I mean, I'm a big runner. You know, I run a lot. But there you go. That was apparently research carried out. Says, sorry, you may like running, but it is not making you feel any better if you're depressed. We heard from a guy who plays badminton, and he says it's the winning part, you know, or just the doing it part. That makes him feel better. So yeah, counterintuitive.
So it's all about picking a weak opponent. running against a two-year-old, you know. I'll beat you to the end of the corner.
And feel great about myself
as long as you don't lose.
Yeah, that would help.
I'm going to give Farai the first crack at her take on the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, because she's clearly qualified to talk about this. Dan, you get to talk about this too, of course.
Well,
what's your take on this? I mean, the coverage was gushing, especially on CNN. We love the Queen. Let's face it. We like to joke that we're independent. We don't need a monarch.
The outfit was great. The hat was great. I give it a 10+. but also, I have to say, I'm the biggest Grace Jones fan in the world. And when she did... you know, slave to the rhythm while hula hooping and singing and showing off her 64-year-old legs, which look a lot better than my 42-year-old legs. I thought that Grace Jones, I mean, I thought it was a really interesting set of people who were, you know, like there's people singing Our House, there's Grace Jones. I mean, you guys do pop culture so well over there.
We do royal culture so well. That's the thing. It went like clockwork. It was fantastic. Even though on the Sunday, when there was this wonderful image of all these boats on the River Thames, it poured and it poured. We've had 2 months of just rain every day. And that was, I don't know if you saw the choir. When the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh parked up underneath Tower Bridge, then this choir came along on a boat. The orchestra was hiding under a plastic sheet, but the choir were on top and they were drenched. These women with their hair all over their faces singing Land of Hope and Glory. Now, if that's not a perfectly British thing to do.
Standing in the rain. Dan Damon, what a career. I'll call it a career, I call it. What a crass phrase for the Queen. What a reign to have started in the early 50s and come to this point. We watch it from a distance, but I think fondly here in America.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I know I spoke to some Americans who'd come over specially. I met a woman from Los Angeles who'd come over just especially to watch this. And I suppose it is because there's something to believe in. It's celebrity, but also it's more meaningful because the Queen does do a job. I mean, she doesn't need to sit there sort of ordering cream teas in Buckingham Palace. She meets the Prime Minister every week. We don't know what they talk about, but it's clear that it's a kind of accountability. And what's most fascinating is that the reputation of the royal family has improved over the past decade or so. Now, only 13% of the people think that there shouldn't be a monarchy in this country. More than 80% love it. There was a small group of Republicans. I was outside St. Paul's Cathedral for the Thanksgiving service. Small group of Republicans stood nearer, so they got quite a lot of coverage, obviously, because they were near the press. They were chanting, "Don't you believe it?" You see what they've done there. every time they chanted that, huge numbers of crowds sang "God Save the Queen," so they didn't really get very far.
Gave them an opportunity to push back. Well, it also gave us an opportunity to see Kate Middleton once again, which is really what we care about here in the States. That's Dan Damon from the BBC's World Update and Farai Chidea from Harvard University's Institute for Politics joining us. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You can get more information about any of those stories, head over to our website. And you can also join our listener response network. You'll get one text a day where we ask you a question that's featured on the next day's show. So your voice becomes part of our on-air conversation. Just text the word START to 69866. That's START to 69866. Have a great weekend. Happy Friday. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.